today, everyone went to Barshana. But everyone was so busy seeing the amazing and beautiful sights of Barshana that no one had a time to really speak about the meaning and deep significance of the places and of Srimati Radharani. Do you think that you could rectify this very difficult situation all the devotees find themselves in?
I think so.
Well then, please do so.
Okay. Well, Well, today, it seems like you all had the great good fortune to go to Barshana, but you may not have had somebody with you to stop all the time and tell you where you were and what you were seeing. And that's not a bad thing, because if you have somebody with you, sometimes the parikrama of Barshana becomes very long and people get a bit tired and they come back, especially after a busy day in Vrindavan the day before. It might have been a good thing that you went all the way around, you've seen all the way around, and now what you have to do is say, what was it that I was seeing?
So, okay, everyone together. What was it that I was seeing?
What was it that I was seeing?
Please, Dagatarini, please tell us what it was that we saw.
That's a little bit too much. Okay, so where did you go? Did you go up to the hill, the temple first? You started at Pilipokar. Then you went to?
Sankarikor.
Then you walked all the way around and ended up at the temple. And then you came down the stairs. Okay.
No.
Oh, you went back to Krishnakund and out that way. Yeah. Got it. Oh, that's the easy way. You avoided the stairs. The stairs are quite challenging, actually. Particularly if you go there at sunset or at a time when the eyesight's not so good and there just seems to be an endless amount of stairs. So first you went to Pilipunkur, and that's the place where, you may have already heard this, that Srimati Radharani washed her hands. So you might say, well, that doesn't sound astonishing because people wash their hands all the time. So why is that important? And the answer is because the reason she washed her hands was because when she went to Nandagram to cook for Krishna, Mother Yasoda couldn't help herself. She couldn't help herself. She has such a strong sense that Krishna and Radha should be together that she called Radha and sat her down and she painted her hands with turmeric. Now, when you paint a young girl's hands in Braj culture with turmeric, it means that you are accepting the marriage between her and your son. But there had been no arrangement for a marriage, so it was quite surprising. So her hands were golden colored, and she hid this because she was very, very shy. And she was returning to Barshana with her friends, and she went to this kund because it's at the bottom and the palace was at the top, and she washed her hands thoroughly because she was very shy, and the water turned a turmeric yellow. And some people saw this. And so those who saw it, some villagers nearby or something like that, they went right up to Kirtida and Bishabanu, her parents, and told them what had happened. Do you know that she came back from Nandagram and her hands were covered in turmeric? And then they also wanted Radha and Krishna to be united. And took it that actually this is a sign. And so the next step was, in the marriage arrangement, is you have to send like a gift to the other family, and then they have to send a gift back. And so they prepared a beautiful golden cart. They filled it with jewels and silken cloth and perfumes and all kinds of fragrances, all sorts of things. They put them very carefully in the cart in beautiful gold jeweled trunks, and they sent that off to Nandagram. Now, that's a long story, so we're not going to go into the whole story because it will take us way outside of Varshana. But that's the
beginning.
Where
will it take us to?
Nandagram.
Okay.
It will take us to Nandagram and Krishna's playfulness. But that's why that kund is called Pilipukur. It's the yellow, because of the yellow of Radharani's hands. That's the lila that's connected to that place. So then you walked from there, you walked all the way around to Sankari Court. Yeah. So Vaishana is on one side, you can see there's a ravine. Everybody walked through this ravine. So this side, on my right, this is the hill, the famous four-headed hill of Brahmaji. Because Lord Brahma, he prayed and prayed and prayed in Satya Yuga, long, long ago, that he could witness the beautiful pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And he wanted that they would give their foot dust to him. Now, it's not very comfortable. Everyone knows if somebody says, "Can I take your foot dust?" you feel like, no, why? But if you're lying on the ground and they walk over you, then naturally it becomes yours. So he aspired to be a hill where these pastimes would take place, Radha and Krishna running here and there, and this would actually be all on his head, and he could experience these leelas. And so he was blessed with that opportunity. And that's why generally, unless otherwise, generally we have barefoot when we go to this Varshana area, because we too are walking on the head of Lord Brahma. So then there's the Brahma Parvat on one side with the different peaks, and on the other side it's a Vishnu Parvat, another hill. The two touch each other, and that place where they touch, it's called Sankari Kor. And on top of the Vishnu Parvat, the other smaller hill, there are also amazingly beautiful childhood pastimes of Radharani and playfully with Krishna as well. But this area that you walked through has been walked through for thousands of years. You were touching very, very sacred rocks, very sacred earth, a very sacred atmosphere there. But I find it's a little hard to be contemplative when we're doing things, because our attention is drawn to the outer around us. Oh, there's a rock. Oh, how am I going to get through there? Oh, done. And then we go on. But if we have a moment, as we do now, to contemplate where we have been, then it's very special, because next time you go there, you know, this is a very, very sacred place. So the gopis would go through there, and even if you watch, I don't know if you've seen any local person, local lady go through there, it's amazing. They don't look down. I think probably most of you, I talk for myself, you're trying to figure out where to put your foot so it's kind of balanced. Did you have that experience? Yes, but they just walk right through, because they've been walking backwards and forwards since their childhood. And they walk through with pots on their heads, whereas we're looking down and left and right, they just go straight. So in Krishna's lila, Radha and the gopis would like to go through there. And Krishna is so naughty, he's so misbehaved. He would climb up on the Vishnu Parvat, and from there he would pick up a nice sized rock. And when a gopi is walking through with a big pot of yogurt on her head, he would take his rock and he would aim it very expertly, and it would go tink, and it would break a small hole in the big pot of yogurt. And all of a sudden, the yogurt would start coming pouring down over the young girls. And they didn't like this. They felt that this was not quite fair. But he was very good at this. It was almost like, what would you call it, like a terrorist or something. But but out of extreme loving affection. Because when they walked through there with their pots on their heads, they were longing for an exchange with him. They were longing for him to do something, and there he was. He'd break their pots. And so they went to Radha and they told her about his misbehavior. And Radha said, I know what to do. She said, tomorrow you go through, one of the girls, you walk through there as usual, and we will hide on the Brahma Parvat. We will all hide in the bushes, and if he does that again, we will jump out and run down and capture him. And so one chosen gopi put the pot on her head, and she started walking through between the two hills. And sure enough, there he was, and he took his rock and he aimed it, and boom! The yogurt started pouring down all over her. And then hundreds of gopis appeared from behind the bushes and behind the rocks, hundreds and hundreds of young girls, and they came running down the mountain, because Varshana is a female prominent place. It's a place of Radha. And so that means that Radha and her friends are dominant in this part, this region of Braj. In Nandagram, it's the opposite. That's where Krishna resides, and Krishna is predominant there. But Varshana, it is ruled by Radha. So they all ran down the hill, ran straight and grabbed Krishna, and perhaps his friend Madhu Mangal was there, because sometimes he would come along too for the fun. And they grabbed Krishna and they took him. And you know what they did?
No. What did they do?
They dressed him up like them. And then they put a pot of yogurt on his head. And then Lalita went up the hill to where Krishna used to hide out. And the girl said, now you walk through. And so Krishna's walking. He's a supreme personality of Godhead. He could do anything he wanted. But he loves these exchanges. And so there he was, very tentatively walking through Sankarikor, and Lalita takes her rock, and she's as expert as him, and she throws her rock, and it hits the pot, and the pot cracks open, and the yogurt poured all over him. And then the girl said, now we're taking you to meet our queen. And so they brought him before Radharani. And Krishna, dressed as a gopi, covered in yogurt, he bowed down at the feet of Radha. And Radha said, you must promise. Of course, he's not very good at keeping his promises. But you must promise that you will never do something like this again. Of course, you should understand that the girls were hoping that he wouldn't keep his promise, because this was the delight of their life, was to interact in this way with playful Krishna. So that's Sankarikor. And when we get through Sankarikor, we come to a town, a small village actually. It's called Chiksoli. And that's the place of Chitradevi. So Chitra Devi is one of the eight main friends of Radha. And her speciality, what she's extremely good at, is she's a beautiful artist. And sometimes even Mother Yasoda would call on her and ask her to draw something for Krishna, to draw a beautiful picture of Radha, or to draw something, whatever she wanted Krishna to appreciate. And Chitra would go to Nandagram and perform that service. And sometimes she would draw a beautiful picture of Krishna for Radharani to pacify her when she was feeling so much sadness. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And you know, at the time it took her to blink her eyes. Let everyone blink your eyes. How long did that take?
An eye blink.
A fraction of a second.
Correct.
It took such a little time to blink your eyes, but to Radha that blink was like eons, like yugas, like not even hours, but that moment that she's not seeing Krishna was like for a huge amount of time, and she would feel so much separation from Krishna, and it's hard for us to understand that, because we blink our eyes and we don't even notice ourselves blinking our eyes, and there's nothing in our life, nothing, even if it's your children, even if it's your family members, there's nothing that a blink of the eye interferes with. We blink, 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 blink. But to them, that much time without Krishna was intolerable. So sometimes Chitra would draw a drawing of Krishna, and sometimes Radha would hear the flute, but she didn't know who was playing it. She'd hear the flute and she would think to herself, oh, I have fallen in love with he who plays the flute like that. It's so beautiful. And then Chitra would draw a picture because Radha was so sad. Look here, look at this picture. And Radha would think, oh, I have fallen in love with the person in this picture. And then another form of Krishna would appear to her. She would see Krishna, she'd hear about Krishna, and she kept thinking, I've fallen in love with three different people. The person in the picture, the person who plays the flute, and that beautiful boy. I've fallen in love with three people. And then she thought, oh, I should now, because she was very chaste, she said, now that I've done this, this is so bad. I should just drown myself in the Jamuna because I have gone against all religious principles. And her friends would say, what's wrong? What's wrong? You're so unhappy all the time. What's wrong? And she wouldn't speak. And eventually one of them said to her, you have to tell us what's on your mind. You're so unhappy. And then she said, I've fallen in love with three people. And then they all laughed. And they said, Radha, those three people are one. That's your Krishna. Then she would go, oh. And then again, she would be peaceful. So that's Chiksoli, the village of Chitra Devi. And then you kept walking and you came to Krishna Kund. And I believe it's said that in Chiksoli there was one very fortunate lady that was one time she was taking care of the cows and she came home and she discovered that Krishna and all of his boyfriends were in her house, in the room where they keep the milk and butter, stealing. And so do you know what she did? She locked the door. Very quickly, she locked the door and she went to call some other people to tell them that I found them, that they're stealing, caught red-handed. But while she went away and came back, Krishna had noticed that there was a small window up high, and so he had managed to put some things together and climb out. And all the boys had got out, only one couldn't get through the window, and that was Madhu Mangal, because he's
what?
So fat.
Oh, I was just about to ask you why he couldn't get through the window.
He couldn't get through because he's very fatty. So his legs were on this side and his arms were on the other side, and he was stuck. And this looked very, very funny. And so the lady whose house it was, she pulled by his legs and she got him back into the room, and he was looking very cowardly because that was his habit. Like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't do anything, and making excuses. And she was like, I caught you. And so in a loving way, because everybody was loving, soft, this is the nature of Varshana, she was slapping him. And then she said, you know, I'm going to tie you. This was a habit. You tie him by his seeker to a tree, and then he's got to stay there for some time. So she brought him out to nearby Krishna Kund, up high on the hill there, up where there's a sort of a seat. And she said, now I'm going to tie you to the tree. And Krishna came. And he said, oh, Ma, what are you doing? She looked at him. He was just stealing from her. He says, you know, he's a Brahmin. You know, if he curses you, your whole family will be destroyed. He's a pious Brahmin. You shouldn't be treating him like this. And she goes, oh, yes. And she remembered, he is a Brahmin. And so he said, oh, you'll have to make atonement to him. You've really insulted him. And this is not good. Krishna, you know, he's so clever. So he said, so you'll have to make up to him. And so the lady of the house said, so, you know, she said some sweet words, and how can I please you? And Krishna said, ladus. Ladus. And so everyone, all the other ladies also, they all went inside and they brought ladus. And they gave boxes and boxes and boxes of ladus to Madhu Mangal. And perhaps that's the reason why you took prasadam there. Is that correct? You took prasadam at Krishna Kund? Yeah, you're very lucky. That's Madhu Mangal's place where he eats all his ladus. So you must get a special blessing for taking your prasadam there. And then also from there, you're already in this forest called Gauravan. And Gauravan means it's a forest that's very, very deep. Now, today, when you travel through that area, you'll see that the pathway is nicely paved, and there are local people who sweep that path every day. And also, you'll see lots of rocks on the side, and people come and they pick up the rocks and they construct a kind of a quaint little house. And that is an expression that in my next life, I want to be born here. The same thing happens at Govardhan, but I've seen that because it's not so good to make a house out of Giriraj Shilas, I've seen people constructing it out of bricks, so like solid brick building. But in Varshana, they use the rocks because the rocks are not of the same sacred quality as they are here at Giriraj. So this Gauravan was a big, dense forest. Even, say, 200, 300 years ago, there was no nice paved pathway. In fact, the first time we went there, do you remember?
Yes. What do I remember?
That's what I was going to ask you.
Go ahead.
What do you remember?
So many things. You have something specific in mind that I remember.
Yes. I think you remember that there was just a dirt path. Yes? And
I
it was.
I remember. Go ahead. Remind me.
Okay, I'll remind you. There was a dirt path and a hut. There was one temple, but it was more like a hut, and it was overrun with forest, and it wasn't nicely paved. It was kind of more wild. But in the time of when Krishna was present, present, and even hundreds of years ago, it was a very dense forest area, and there are even tigers there.
I don't remember that. Did we see any?
That was last night.
Or the one before. So it's a very special place. It's a place where Radha and Krishna would often meet. It's a place where many, many, many sadhus have gone to do their bhajan, to meditate, to chant, to pray, to seek entrance into the Vrindavan that we cannot see with our eyes. This aprakat Vrindavan, invisible Vrindavan, which is the eternal place, the place where those who are fortunate, extremely fortunate, they reside there. So Gaurabhavan has one peak is Mor Kutir. Perhaps you saw up on the hill, that's Mor Kutir. And then on the other side, as you're walking around, you might have seen that's Mangar up here. And then when you keep walking, you come to a place called Dangar, where there's a beautiful swing structure, but no swing permanently installed. And then, of course, you come eventually to the Sriji Mandir. So these are the places of Lord Brahma's hill. This is how he does his service. And Mor Kutir is where Krishna and Radha meet, and the peacocks are there. You know, about 3 days ago, I started hearing peacocks here. And there was a little boy with me who was more energetic than me. And he ran outside and he counted 32 peacocks in the field over there. But the majority of them were female and they were quite small. So I don't know what a group of peacocks is called, but there was only three or four males. And once or twice, one of the males got up his you-know-what, and he started flapping, you know, they flap their wings at the back and they make a very loud sound. And he spread his tail feathers and he danced for all the females, because this is the way of mating between the male and female peacock. He dances, he flourishes, makes an amazing display. And somebody amongst all the semi-interested females turns her attention and says, that's a very nice dance. And then he goes, aha, and he continues with his role. So the peacocks were dancing at Mor Kutir, and Krishna got up and he started dancing somewhat like a peacock. And then he asked Radha, who was there, so whose dance was better, my dance or the peacock? And she said, the peacock. The peacock's dance was better. And so then Krishna, he assumed like the form of a peacock, and he started dancing exactly like the peacocks. And then he said to her, so whose dance was better? And she said, the last dance was better. Krishna wasn't very encouraging. She wasn't rising to his presentation. So then both Radha and Krishna started to dance together as beautifully as a male and female peacock. So this is the nature of Mor Kutir. It's a place where Radha and Krishna would meet with the peacocks. And Mangar on the other side is where Radharani would go when she was angry with Krishna. And he had many ways to make Radha angry with him. It's hard to imagine for us, because if we make somebody angry, we usually feel either glad because we don't like them, or we feel sorry because we didn't mean to. But Krishna likes to make Radha angry, and he likes to go through the methods involved in pacifying her. So there's one good way he can make Radharani angry. He can show up late, like very late, hours and hours late. And then he can begin, just a few syllables, he can begin to call her by another gopi's name. Anyone can understand what would happen.
She became angry.
She became not only angry, there's two kinds of anger. There's haituki and ahaituki. Ahaituki means there's no real cause, so then she'll get over that quite quickly. But this anger had a very strong cause. So Radha turns and leaves immediately, doesn't want to talk to Krishna, never speak to Krishna again, and so he goes off.
What do you do? That Krishna, I'll never.
That Krishna, I'll never speak to him again, and not only that, I don't want to see anything black, because everything that's black reminds me of him. So when the nighttime comes, I'll close my eyes and I'll cover my hair and I won't talk to those birds, those cuckoo birds who are so blackish, and everything should be without anything black because he's black. So I won't ever again speak to him, never. And Krishna likes this. He likes it. Would you like that?
Yes, dear.
We practice. But yes, so she gets very, very angry. And she doesn't want to speak to anyone. And Vishakha is, she's mild-mannered. Lalita is fiery. So if Krishna does something like that to Lalita, if Lalita is present when Krishna does something like that, Lalita will step in front of Radha and tell Krishna exactly what she thinks of him and send him away and never come back. But Vishakha likes to mediate and make things work. Because when Radha gets angry, she sends Krishna away, then what happens?
She cries.
Why does she cry?
Because she misses him.
She misses him. This is the nature of love in the spiritual world. It goes round and round and round in a mysterious way. So Radha sends him away, he goes away, Vishakha comes and says, what's the problem? And Krishna says, oh, she will not speak to me. She's not even talking to me. She won't have anything to do with me. And Vishakha says, oh, I have a suggestion. And so Vishakha will lend Krishna a nice set of gopi clothes, a nice blouse, a nice skirt, a nice covering for her head. And Krishna knows, he's a master of disguises. So he knows how to make himself appear just like a beautiful young girl. And perhaps it's a little giveaway that this girl has a very dark complexion. But he becomes like a perfectly sweet young girl. And Vishakha then brings her in to Radha and says, Radha, she says so many things. Sometimes she says, Radha, this is the barber's daughter. And she's come here because she wants to massage your feet. And Radha looks, but it's a girl, so that's no problem. And so then she comes in and she's got all her paints and she's painting the name Radha, Radha, Sham, Sham on Radharani's feet. And Radharani is noticing that this girl is particularly outstanding and she's extremely beautiful. And while she's painting so carefully, 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 Radha notices that there's a flute sticking out at the back of her skirt. So Radha understands, So she says, you're so beautiful. Thank you so much for coming here and serving me. What can I do for you? And the girl says, oh, you don't have to do anything for me. I'm just happy to serve you. And she says, no, no, no. I must give you something. You're so kind. And Krishna says, no, 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 no. Only just the opportunity to serve you is enough. find your love. And she says, no, no, we're all girls together. So what you should do is, she says to the girls, you take off that skirt and that veil and everything, and we'll put on a new set of clothes. And Krishna's like, no, 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 please not be quiet. I have enough, enough, I have enough. And backing back, backing back. And the girls come all around, and then they take off his skirt, and then they take off the veil, and there's Krishna. And when they take off the blouse, two big mangoes fall out. And then Krishna's caught, he's been exposed to all the girls. And of course it's so funny that Radharani forgets her angry mood, completely forgotten when Krishna is there in these very warm, sweet exchanges of love. So we see in this world that everyone is acting as a reflection of these transcendental exchanges. Everyone is looking for somebody who will love them causelessly, somebody who will boost them, who will make them feel whole and satisfied, or somebody who will serve them or they can serve them, and so forth. But the perfection of that is seen in that spiritual realm. So as we turn our attention towards that realm, this satisfies our heart in a way that can't be satisfied any other way. We may be happy in this world, but there's always time and change. And any time something can shift and change, we know this. So there's, if you have something you love, you're worried, what if something happens to this? This is so special. But the love between Radha and Krishna is permanent, eternal. And Prabhupada says we should join in that love. That love is permanent. So this is actually, should be, in this life, the way we're directing our journey towards this realm of pure love. That's more kutir. Then we come to dhangati, which is where in Sankari Kaur, I forgot to mention, that often the boys will come there and they'll put a bamboo stick across like this. And this is the boys. And when the girls see the boys in their place putting up a border, you know, this is like you've got to pay tax here, they become furious and say, what are you doing here? This is Barshana, this is the place of Vrishabhanu Maharaj. And the boys say, but the whole of Braj is under the king, Nanda Maharaj. So we're going to charge you tax on your dairy products. And the girls get furious. And sometimes they charge them tax, and the girls, they fight with each other. The girls fight with the boys fight with the girls, and so on. And Dhangati, on the other side, is where the girls get their opportunity to charge tax to the boys. They catch the boys and they say, now you have to serve us because this is Varshana and it's Srimati Radharani's place. And there's another funny story that's connected to that place about a very poor Brahmin. Now, a very poor Brahmin is often, if he's married, in a difficult situation if he has a daughter. Because when it's time for the daughter to get married, he has to provide a dowry. So this Brahmin, he had no money in order to get his daughter married, and his wife was so frustrated with him. She told him, you should go out today and find some wealth, or else don't come back tonight. Wow. And so he went out, and he was feeling very unhappy. He was looking here, looking there, and he came to this place in Varshana. And when he came there, he met Krishna. And Krishna said to him, you're a Brahmana, what can I give you? is such a good fortune that I'm meeting with you. And the Brahmana said, oh, I need wealth. I need wealth. And Krishna said, then I will give you the most valuable thing I have. He was happy about that. And then Krishna said, I will give you Radha. And all the girls, their eyes became wide with horror, and the Brahmana's eyes became wide with horror. And he said, I already have one unmarried daughter. You want to give me another unmarried daughter? And he started to cry. And Krishna said, and the girls are crying. Krishna's crying, the girls are crying, the Brahmin's crying, the girls are crying. And Krishna said, all right, then put Radha on a scale. So they placed Radha, she sat on a scale. And then he asked all the girls to take off their bangles and their jewelry and put it on the other side of the scale until they became equal. And then he gave the Brahmana whatever wealth was available from that that experience of the scale. And the Brahmana was then very happy. So then we come to the Jayapur temple, which is it's a Nimbaki temple built by the king of Jayapur. I'm not quite sure at what time. At that time, there was no main temple in Varshana like the one we see today. And the Jayapur kings, because the Jayapur kings had taken care of Radha Govinda Dev, they also wanted to build this palace. It was actually a palace, and take care of the deities in Varshana. And originally the pandits and the brahmanas in Varshana agreed, because there was no temple, and it's a very beautiful temple inside. But then they realized, this would be difficult, because then Varshana would fall under the rulership of the king. And so then it would be like the king's place. And so the Brahmanas discussed amongst themselves, and they decided that Varshana should always be free from that kind of royal management. And so they refused the offer. And so if you go in that temple you see today, there are three altars, and there are deities in there being worshipped, but they are not the deities in the main temple. So then they constructed the main temple, and that's where you went. And the deities are very small, very potent. It's a very popular place now. I assume you had many people surrounding you when you went inside, yes, hustling. And did you notice the man with the whistle and the stick? Yes? Yes? Yeah. I noticed him last year. He had a whistle and a stick. And if you take out your mobile phone, he whistles and he whacks you. whacks your phone. Was he not there this year? They weren't there?
We didn't go. What place was it?
In the main temple. The big Sriji temple.
Yeah, he was there.
So some people saw him. Lalita, I remember, took out her phone. So she met him last year.
He hit her with his whistle. No.
So he's very busy when there's a crowd from Delhi, because everybody wants to take a photo. And they're determined not to let them take photos, so he's running around touching all the phones and asking them to put them away. So Varshana has become a very, very popular place over the last perhaps 10 years. And so now you'll see when you go to Varshana that there'll be large crowds of people also wanting to get the mercy of Srimati Radharani. So you are all very fortunate that you got this opportunity. I know it's not entirely comfortable walking and pushing and crowding and all of these things, but the benefit of going to Varshana is enormous. And so that's already in each one of you who went. It's in your bank account, and that's to your great good fortune in this life and ongoing from here. But it's challenging, isn't it, to keep yourself in an understanding that there's a spiritual potency in this place when you're walking on the ground. that effort that Radharani is looking for, because she's very soft-hearted. So she's not looking for great achievement, she's looking for effort. So when you go there, you should know that Radharani is very merciful, and she wants to see me try my best to be here, ultimately. So I think that's mostly everything of Varshana. Is there anywhere else that I didn't mention? No, I see Lalita looking at me with those thoughtful eyes, which indicates that I might have forgotten something. But I think that might be all. Yeah. All right, dear.
Now what do we do?
It's your turn.
That was a long 10 minutes.
Sorry.
No, that was a joke. I could change the mood and speak something about Govind, or we could ask if there's any questions. And if, does anyone have any burning questions? Or yes.
I wanted to know that Vishnu, Brahma, and Shivji, they wanted to all go to Vrsana. Where is Shivji in Vrsana?
Shriji?
Shivji.
He's in Nandaram. He's busy somewhere else.
What's the story? Why is he there?
He's the hill on which Krishna's Leela takes place. And Brahma is the hill on which Radha's Leela takes place. And of course we know Vishnu, ultimately Vishnu, is Giriraj, where both of them come. So they but each have their own place.
And also there's Asheshwar Mahadev near Tirukadamba, where you went already. Where Lord Shiva is there, where I think it was Parjanya Maharaj, the grandfather of Nanda Maharaj's grandfather, who performed austerities to have a wonderful, to have Krishna as his descendant. Now I have a question for you. You ready? You ready? You sure? Close your eyes. That's not a question. But close your eyes. And think of your experience today and what your eyes are open. You have to close your eyes. Think of your experiences today and stop at one place in your experience. And think of what do you make of that experience in that place? How does it relate to your life, your everyday life? How does what you experience today in its most deepest part relate to your everyday life? Or is it just something that occurred today that had its sweetness, its excitement, its otherworldliness, but it's going to be forgotten? Yes, it's a jewel, a treasure that can always be yours. But is there some way that what you experienced today or yesterday or the day before can relate to your life? Does anyone have any thought that they would like to share about this question? Yes. What's your name?
Madhu
Mangal?
No, Manu.
Madhu Mangal?
Manu.
Manu.
Like the 14
Okay, not like the Marumanga with all the ladus.
No.
Different, okay.
I wish, but no ladus.
How much do you wish for that?
For the ladus, a little bit. For the name, not so much.
Mm. Okay, you were going to say something wonderful, or something.
Well, when we went to Sriji Temple at the top, then Radish and others started to sing, and we did some kirtan. And at first, I felt a little shy or awkward just because of the amount of people and other things going on. But then, you know, once it picked up, I really felt that this is something wonderful. Other people started to engage as well. That there was a reminder that we should be bold in Krishna's service, and present and enthusiastic.
Mm. Wonderful, Manu. Radhadamara Ji, how are you feeling today?
Better, thank you. When we came down from the Sriji temple after that amazing kirtan.
How long did that kirtan go on?
About 20 minutes.
Mm.
It could have gone on for longer, but they stopped us.
With a whistle and a stick?
And as we're coming down, I was feeling, you know, there's so much pushing, and I mean, that was really cramped, that area. And I had like, at any one time, there's 20 people touching you. And, I was feeling like, I just want to get down to wherever we're going. And then as we arrived at Krishna Kund, this beautiful old lady she was just there. And as we turned the corner, me and my wife both noticed her. She must have been in her late 80s. And she just gave us the most beautiful smile. She was really simple. I don't know what she was doing. She was just standing there. She didn't look like a beggar. I think she was maybe a resident in the area. And she was very small. But she looked so illuminating and so happy and so self-satisfied. And I thought, wow, this is like the perfection of life. That she was 80 or 90. And she's just so content in her, where she is in this present moment. And I just thought that whenever I get to that age, if I do get to that age, then that's the dream, just to be somewhere in my little corner, just fully self-satisfied and happy.
I had two questions came to my mind. How does that experience relate to the experience that you described first about being surrounded by people, and it sounded like it was somewhat uncomfortable for you, and everyone touching you and them stopping the kirtan and things? How do the two pieces fit together for you?
I guess I was so in my head at the top, coming down from the top, and she seemed to be so in her heart, and for me it was like shift from your mind to your heart. That was kind of a link, I guess, to answer the question. Yeah.
And my second question, but I have a comment on that, but first I'll ask the second question, that how are you going to get there? My comment was that lady who is so elderly and self-satisfied, appeared so self-satisfied, can you imagine what she's tolerated for 80 years? Because we can have a romantic idea of, you know, everyone's walking on rose petals there, but it gets really cold and it gets really hot and the temple is crowded and perhaps she wasn't wealthy and perhaps this, perhaps that. So to become self-satisfied, one has to be externally very tolerant. And if we let
external things really trouble us, then they'll completely distract us from what's inside. But then the question is, well, if these external things are going on, how do I even get to the internal? I'm so externally disturbed and agitated. So the answer, which isn't easy to accomplish, is that one has to become deep. One has to become deep in a very internal way. One time, I think it was perhaps in 1967 or 8, or very early, when Prabhupada was walking with the devotees in probably Los Angeles. Yes, Los Angeles. Yeah, I thought it was San Francisco, but anyway, it was the same point. He was walking by the Pacific Ocean, and he asked, why is the Pacific Ocean so peaceful? And Pacific means peaceful. And he asked the devotees he was walking with, and they didn't give an appropriate answer. And then he answered it himself, because it's deep. So on one level, as we go through life, the inconsistencies that we experience within ourselves, if we are a little bit introspective, really direct us and give us instructions and allow us to self-assess our actual situation. So perhaps those two combined together is Krishna or Srimati Radharani or the many goddesses or the dust of Barsana is just tapping you on the shoulder and saying, it's time. If you want to end up self-satisfied, you have to become deep and internal. And internal means in your relationship with Krishna, that's so satisfying to you that the externals don't really disturb you in the same way. Another example, I saw with Srila Prabhupada that just imagine what it was like for such an elderly gentleman, so cultured and old. It's like, I could tell you now, it's not like fun when you get old. You know, it's not like you have an old wrinkly body but you're the same inside, or you are on one level, but the pieces don't work anymore. But Prabhupada, he did it. He traveled around the world, he did this, he did that, he dealt with so many people. When you read about Prabhupada in San Francisco, have you ever read that part of the Prabhupada Lilamrita, when Prabhupada was in San Francisco? That more than any other part strikes me, how Prabhupada just in the midst of, one would have to say, insanity, you know, people crazy, and having no idea of culture or how to deal even with an elderly person, what to speak of an elderly saintly person or the culture or anything. And there he was. He would sit there and people would knock on his door, or 26 Second Avenue, people would knock on his door and just come in and ask them this question and that. And he, because of the depth of his own consciousness, he remained always in Vrindavan. A talk I heard him give recently in 1966, it sounded like there were only a few people in the room, and they didn't know anything about Krishna consciousness, but they were practicing yoga, and they thought they already knew everything, and they were asking him questions, and he would say, if you go to a sacred place, this happens, and they would say, when you go to a secret place, you know, they didn't quite get his accent even, and then he said, you may wonder why I'm here. He said something like that. And then he started talking about Vrindavan. If I was in Vrindavan, there would be no difficulties.
But here, it is not that I'm happy here. He said this. I miss Vrindavan. But you may ask, why are you here then? And he said, because it's my duty, my spiritual master. So there's a certain depth of commitment and experience that one has to gather, like a wealthy man often has taken time for him to gather the jewels of his wealth. So life is meant for this, for gathering jewels of wealth, spiritual wealth, that compound over time, and they increase over time if we carefully guard them, and so that we don't expect it to be a miracle that when we're older, we're going to suddenly become self-satisfied. rather, if we don't carefully collect tools of wealth, when we're older, we're going to become very cynical and miserable because the body is difficult. And then you look back on your life and you look back on what you thought was wealth, and it turned out to be just a bunch of things that are zeros, a compilation of zeros. So as we experience life, as we experience our time in the Dham, you know, we should do it with thought, and see what the experience, what strikes us, see what really strikes us in what happens to us, and then what does it mean? Why did this of all things strike me? You saw two things that seem to be opposite in one sense, or two or three. One was that you got stopped from the kirtan, which is quite odd on one level, and then the disturbance, and then you saw this lady, this Mataji, who was effulgent with her purity of living a whole life in Barsana, probably, or in the surrounding areas. It's not easy to become a saint. And it's, you know, it's not like poof, or can be, but it's generally, you have to want something and try your best to act in such a way that some mercy comes to you, and you have to, you know, want it. Yeah, thank you very much for any other experiences? What do you make of what happened to you today? Say something that happened to you today, if you so desire. Did you see any wonderful trees that you found? Inspiring. Yes.
I wrote
a bull, I know. Very exciting. It's all over YouTube. The whole world is talking about it. Do you know that Jai Gopali was riding a bull? Who does she think she is? Lord Shiva? And it's become a great controversy now. I'm only making it up, though. Sorry.
I wish it was true.
Don't wish, especially if we got a Kamyavan. Don't.
I was just reflecting on the experience of going to Barsana today versus the experience of going to Barsana last time. And actually, this whole session has really satisfied that desire to hear about the place, but I realized my consciousness was different, having not really heard much about the places we visited, even though we went to the same places last year and he told us these stories. I was really surprised at how my mind, or how my knowledge, hadn't stuck from last year. So I think I'm wondering, how much do I hear that actually sticks in my brain? Because I couldn't recall many of the stories that you had told us from last year. special, but I didn't realize how special it was until it wasn't there. And I really felt that you gave us access to really be able to be very present in Barshana, despite the busyness. Whereas today I felt like I let the busyness get to me, if that makes sense. So thank you. And it just made me realize that it just was a reminder.
May we speak about that? Okay, what do you make of that? I mean, the experience of last year as opposed to this year, and the conclusion that you reached, and then the appreciation of the association, because the association is like a key that opens the door to the holy place and allows you to see it on a level that you wouldn't have seen it on your own, and you can become so externally enamored or attracted to something very superficial or even wrong. So, and then you also made the point that you had forgotten what was said last year, this year, and you tended to be more externally absorbed. What do you make of that?
Even though I was relishing the stories when you were telling them last year, I felt like maybe I wasn't able to remember them because I felt like I hadn't had the mercy to be able to do so, and that actually my desire wasn't strong enough to want to retain them. So my prayer on the way down, when I was realizing that I couldn't recall any of the stories, was just really asking for the mercy to be able to retain.
Okay, because that I always think of that as the easy way.
Mm.
I want blessings and mercy,
yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
It all happens automatically. And people always, I mean, because I'm old now, so people think I'm, you know, an older devotee on one level, but you're advanced. So please give me your blessings. Please give me your blessings. Please give me your blessings. As if you're some kind of a blessing ATM or something like that. Sorry, better be careful. But what's your part in that? His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj, within the last year, he told me something that he had heard from one disciple of Prabhupada who personally witnessed it. Someone said, some person came to Prabhupada and said, please give me your blessings. And Prabhupada went like this. He said, we have such a big society, and all the issues, all the problems, all the decisions, they all come to me. If you want my blessings, please take some of this burden from me. I didn't get it exactly right, but that was the essence. So I think if you want superficially want blessings, not that you're superficially wanting blessings, then you get superficial blessings, you know. 2 rupees, please. Mm-hmm. Blessing, 1 blessing, 2 rupees, 3 blessings, 5 rupees. But if you really wanted to remember those pastimes, what would you do? Or enter into them in a deeper way, not like they're just a story. What would you do? What will you do?
I was thinking I read them and go and find out more about those stories.
And think about them, perhaps.
Yeah.
And think of perhaps they have deeper significance. Like we hear about the man who has, you know, has one daughter and he needs some wealth and his wife this, and then he meets Krishna, and then, yeah, Krishna, why are you so sad? I need wealth. Okay, I'll give you what's most dear to me, Radharani. And no, I already have one unmarried daughter. This is now I have twice two unmarried daughters that have to this, that. So it's a cute little story, right? And then everyone puts their jewels in it. It's very, but is there any significance to it beyond its cuteness? Krishna says that she's my greatest wealth. And he's giving his greatest wealth to this brahmana, the officer. Yeah. Is there any significance to that? And then, and maybe we also look for a different kind of wealth. And do we trust, if we have the wealth of Krishna consciousness, that if we actually develop the consciousness that this is real wealth that won't be stolen in time, that all other wealth will follow, that I will be taken care of? I mean, so many things one could think of, but without thinking of them, we won't think of them. Without thinking and being introspective, nothing. I mean, of course, there's something wonderful in the cute stories, and but if we want them to stick, we have to stick to them. And we have to think of the significance of them. What do you remember? You remember something that's important to you. So if you don't make it important to you, why will you remember it? So how will you make something important to you? You have to know its wealth, its value. And how do you know something's value? You have to examine it. Because the whole world is going to try and pull you in a different direction. And that's why we forget, because the whole world, I mean, that's what Maya does. It's pixie dust. It's glitter. You know, just to distract us with so many so-called important things that simply distract us from any depth in our relationship with Krishna. I'm not certainly just not pointing to you particularly. I get affected completely worse. But unless we have some true focus, and again, the world is going to try to unfocus you. And you know, it's such a sad thing in one sense. You know, we'll be here for 7 days, and everything is wonderful, and we're in a special bubble of, and then you get in the taxi, and by the time you go through security at the airport, you know, it's like 90% gone already. You know, because it's just that the world forces you into its mentality, and it's built in that way. You can't, you know, you try to go through security, although in India, you know, the people will say Hare Krishna, but we should know it's a battle, and unless we become deep, we'll get derailed. And then how do you become deep? You know, people ask questions like that, and you know, what do you answer? How do you become deep other than becoming deep? You know, what do you do? You know, you have to, good, there's so many, well, how do you become deep? What's your understanding?
What does it mean to become deep?
Like, what does it mean to have a very deep shelter that in all circumstances, like the ocean is deep, so therefore when there's, the Pacific Ocean is deep, so that means on the surface, when there's a storm below the surface, it's you know, just a few feet below the surface, it's undisturbed. So how do we become undisturbed? How do we become deep? We have to have a deep shelter. We have to deeply take shelter of Krishna. And then we could ask the question, well, why don't we deeply take shelter of Krishna? And that's a very personal, private question. That, you know, it's not like everyone's going to raise their hand and say, why they don't deeply take shelter of Krishna. It's something we should think about. What stops us? What stops us from deeply taking shelter of Krishna? What inspires us to play around with the material energy? You know, what do we want? That's one of the questions we tend to ask and maybe it may come up on the Alone with Krishna time, but there's one question: what do you want in life? And then the next question is, what do you really want? Because everyone knows the right answers. What do you really want? Just between you and you, and between you and Krishna, what do you really want? And examine it. And is this what you really want to want? And then if you really want something of more depth, if you really want something deeply in relationship with Krishna, well, that does put pressure on one. Yeah, so therefore, say, what do you want? Well, what do you really want? What do you really, really want? And that, we ask ourselves very privately. So why don't we do that right now, just since we opened that little door? Close your eyes. And I'm not going to ask. After raise your hand and tell me what you really, really, really want. Don't, but just ask yourself in an honest way. Well, put yourself in a holy place too, so you have as opposed to a department store or something, or a toy store or whatever or a mobile phone store or whatever it is. Well, what do you really want? Often we find that part of us wants one thing and part of us wants another. So we tend to think in what is the best part of you really want, and then how do you deal with all the other parts who have other desires? So that gets into more complicated psychology in one sense, but yeah, what do you really want? Take that to your worshipable deity with a prayer.